greatly, and whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. Found this in a book some time back by Brother Guy in Woods. I want you to listen to this. He made it into a syllogism. He says, to be led astray, or deceived, as the King James Version has it, is to sin. Those who ingest alcoholic beverages are, quote, led astray. That's the minor premise. Therefore, conclusion, those who drink such potions sin. Either the conclusion is correct, or Solomon's inspired affirmation must be disputed. I thought that was a good point. Floor is open to questions. Okay, hold your hands up. Looks like we're going to be busy. Let's try to keep the questions brief. And
let's hope for a comment instead of question.
Okay. All right, you're first.
In John, the second chapter, concerning the feast at Cana, or the wedding feast at Cana, I don't know if you want to deal with this as part of your subject or not, but in verse 10, the words of the master of the feast to the bridegroom, when he says, when men have well drunk, then that which is worse, but they bring out that wine which is worse. Is that idea that, the idea he's presenting there, is it that the people are so drunk they don't notice the wine is worse, or that they have consumed enough beverage that they don't desire anymore, and so the worse is brought out? Would you comment on that?
Okay. Of course, I get your question there as far as just the worse. You know, today man says that the more intoxicated is the better, but that wasn't true. And we can quote scholars. I don't know if I'm just putting my hand right over on that right now. But the best wine in that day was not the worst, where they were, you know, they made every effort even to preserve the pure juice, and the best was the pure. Okay, I'll have something. Let me add just a little bit more on that. Maybe it'll keep down, or maybe answer without too many questions on this. And I don't really have any objection to discussing things like this, because I think they're interrelated too. But when Jesus made the wine there, in verse 11 it says that it manifested forth his glory. It's, how would that which is a mocker manifest glory to God? You know, and it manifested the glory to God. And the point is this, according to all scholars, the water pots of that day were from 20 to 30 gallons. All right, he had six of them. All right, he made then some 120 to 180 gallons. Now, it seems obvious that the host thought he had enough to start with to feed everybody. So he must have had a lot to start with if he thought he could feed everybody. Then Jesus made 120 to 180 gallons more. Well, I mean, I don't know what size you think the servings would be or how much it served. I don't think anybody could say there's just that's fermented wine, definitely, and then accuse Jesus of doing it moderately.
Well, my point was the idea of when he says they are well drunk, then he brings out the worse. That an indication that the people at the wedding feast were drunk and then all of a sudden this good wine had been brought out? Or is the word well drunk there that they were well filled, that they had drunk to their full and were not drunken in the sense that we're using the word?
I believe it was that well filled. In fact, I had looked up Bar Johnny's and I couldn't remember what verse it was, but it came to me now. I tried to, I wanted to buy McKnight, a book that Johnny had back here on epistles. And he contrasts that in 1 Corinthians 11 and 22. Anyway, with where some were filled and some were drunken. And he deals with that, you know, the generics of what he's using there would be the drunken was filled with drink. You know, it wasn't in a drunken stupor, because what he's mixing, he'd be mixing apples and oranges. One's talking about eating, you know, about the quantity you got. And then all of a sudden, if not this other's what something did to you, that you drink. And Matt Knight makes some of the best on that. And I was trying to find what I was after for service, and I couldn't remember the scripture. I believe the scripture.
Thank you.
Okay, Brian Burns.
Jimmy, do you have the definition of drunk in Ephesians 5:18 combined?
I thought I did. I mean, you got it, go ahead and give it to me.
Well, someone else may either confirm or correct, but if I remember right, he points out that drunk is pointing toward the process rather than the end of being drunk, going through the process of drunk indicated even one drink. Say, if I'm correct, the others may confirm or...
Thank you. I think I had that in essence, because what I said was, you know, it speaks of a state, not an amount, you know, in a way. Yeah. And so...
Here he mentions, signifies to make drunk or to grow drunk, marking the process of the state expressed. You know, so it's not just you can drink and as long as you don't become intoxicated.
Okay.
But he's pointing out just the process.
Banqueting is something everybody's got to deal with. There's nothing about drunk in the banqueting, you know, in 1 Peter. Where he used to, and there was a drinking party, you know, banqueting that's condemned as a work of the flesh. And he didn't say anything about getting drunk there. It was a drinking party that was condemned.
Okay, Dan, we're saying?
On that 1 Peter 4:3, that banqueting, did you find in your definition that it, one of the definitions was just a drinking? That it didn't have to be
a
party, just
that's
a drinking?
That's what W. Vine. In fact, says a drinking, and then he puts a drinking or party. You know, so it wasn't just a, it didn't have to just be.
Also, with that drunk, some have said that it's to a degree. At what point is an individual drunk? And as long as an individual is affected, which, as you mentioned, he can be affected by one drink, then he is drunk to a degree.
And boy, you know, the problem there too is like where it affects the control part of the brain, and when we got a. Where Solomon tells what it makes us do and say, and then we've got to give an account at the judgment day for every idle word. Now, if anybody's ever had any less patience with drunks than me, it was my daddy. I don't have any patience. And I don't want to talk to one when he's drunk. He don't remember what we talked about anyhow, and I'm not going to sit around for him. I'm not going to talk to drunk. I don't talk to that at 2 o'clock in the morning when he calls me on Sunday morning. I just say, call me when you ain't drunk. Hang it up. But at any rate, you know, there's brethren that do us wrong that I can forgive them. In fact, one of the greatest things in life is if you look back on something that you believe you've really done wrong, and now you know they're one of the closest people to you, and maybe they've never even asked you to forgive them, and that's been a real joy, you know. And I think every mature Christian can look at those times for people that's been that way. That they can just be so thankful that they forgave them. But you know, people today, they want to say, well, I was drunk. I have a hard time forgiving anybody drunk. I have a hard time because they're responsible for what they take into it. And I have a rough time with it. I don't want no drunk around.
Okay. Johnny, did you have your hand up on that?
That passage in Timothy, unfortunately, it seems like that the ones that are the most at hand are the passages all of the people know that want to support that. But I had a relative to make this argument not long. Well, didn't Paul say to Timothy, drink a little wine? I said, no. He said, yes, it did. It said something about drink a little wine. I said, no, it said use a little wine for your stomach's sake. I think he said, well, what's the difference? To me, the difference is like you would use medicine, not for hilarity's sake, but for medicinal purposes. And as you pointed out, that was back in a time when that was probably maybe the best medicine they had. You have things even that are better. But did you take the position that that was, that could be fermented wine there? I didn't recall hearing you say. But the reason I'm asking is because to me that explains the deacon. He could use it for medicinal purposes. But the elder of the elder, it says he's not to be about wine, or he is not to use, or he's to drink no longer wine, or he's not to have wine. So to me there's a degree there, and that would explain the degree. The elders' reputation must be not even tarnished by saying, well, he does keep a little in the icebox, you know, when he has these stomach problems or something.
I definitely believe that's intoxicating wine. Timothy was to take a little for his stomach's sake. And I really agree with Kaufman's sayings on that, though Kaufman, I don't agree with on his position is McGuigan shows him up big, you know, about...
On John 2.
Yes, on John 2 in a big way. But in any way, on this particular point, and the only reason I mentioned him is just not from plagiarism, because NBC can't put more cameras on you than our brother can. But at any rate, just to keep from plagiarism, but... when Kaufman made mention, you know, when he says, he makes an argument that Paul, if we take it that it's grape juice and we take it literally, then Paul said, Timothy, don't drink any more water, not a drop, but drink a little grape juice. All right, here's a man that's in a hot and dry climate that can't have no more liquids and just a very little bit of grape juice. Okay, to me, the essence of that is, drink no longer. They didn't have the pure water we have in this country. And some of the others have been to the foreign country and know the problems of drinking some of the waters, I reckon, too. But he says, drink no longer water only. Mix a little wine with it for thy stomach's sake. Now, to me, that makes more sense. Whereas you got a man down that can't have much liquid. And in all fairness, it's like Ron Carter said the other year, that the way to interpret the Bible literally is to get the sense of what it's saying. You know, not just take one word and define it, but the sense. And that, to me, that's the sense of it. Shoot me down if you shoot me down, or if I need shooting down on it, I give no quarter, and I ask no quarter when it comes to the truth.
Okay. Alan?
Well, just to comment on these foreign countries real quickly. Good idea not to be drinking water or wine either, just drink Coca-Cola. Jimmy, on this thing in 1 Timothy 4:3, I know that's not your talk, but I just want to make a comment. I hope it's helpful. This banqueting, as you mentioned a while ago, and Dan pointed out, it just means a drinking together. There are three words there that deal with drinking, or different types or facets of drinking. He talks about excess of wine, revelings, and banquetings. All three of those involve drinking. And excess of wine, I think in that instance, is talking about the drunkard who's tapped out in the gutter and can't walk a straight line or can't walk at all. The revelings involves heavy social drinking. The fellow who has to have two or three drinks every evening on the way home from work, or two or three at lunch, and maybe both. And banquetings, in comparison to those other two, simply means drinking.
That's right.
Period.
Thank you. We don't do that.
Thank you.
Dan Elmore?
This question I had kind of went along with the subject. I don't know if it's exactly on. If you don't want to answer, that's fine. But, you know, I've noticed a lot lately that people have been going to restaurants and that kind of thing, whether it's bars, you know, Christians, and going into places where maybe there's a bar over on one wall, and eight, and you know, this to me, I think shows a lack of concern for our example, our influence. You know, of course, people say, well, we just go there for the food. They've got good food, but most people that frequent those places do go there because they have both the alcohol and the food. But I was just wondering if you had any concerns along that line. You know, I think that our influence needs to be guarded very carefully. And just because a place serves food doesn't mean it's a fine place to go. And somebody asked me, well, how do you tell, you know, which place you're in, is whether they serve drinks or not? Well, I usually tell when they ask me the first question, would you like a cocktail with your meal? Or would you like something from the bar with your meal? I just wondered if you wanted.
Well, I lived in the state of Texas when they legalized liquor by the drink. And, of course, as you well know, you know, you couldn't, all the Pizza Huts and all the pizza, everyone in Wichita Falls would do there, you know, everyone I'm sure liquor with. I think we've got to consider influence in the looks of it. It looks like a honky-tonk, for sure. But I've never... one brother in Fort Worth, a young brother, a teenager one time, quit a job at a grocery store because he was bagging beer that people bought there at Safeway. Well, the logical deal, if you carry that, then, well, it could be by groceries there, you know, and get to where in all the grocery stores sell it. I've never pressed that, you know, just I've never pressed that a Christian couldn't eat. And, of course, you're not saying that either. But I think what you're saying is a choice. And I'm not going in one looks like honky-tonk. But the same principle might be with the self-service gas stations where the beer joint's got the cheapest gas, you know. And it's, I've never pressed that on anybody, but I think there's some consideration to be had about where we go.
Ron Corder.
Jimmy, just a practical comment. It might help some with temptations in this area. I don't like to even use the word social drinking. I never have figured how you can figure out drinking social. I guess it means you got to get ass bombed so you can stand the other guy. But all I want to say was this. You know, it might help, especially young people. When people ask you to take a drink, don't simply just say no thank you. Tell them you can't take a drink because of your love for Christ. The reason I say this is this. If you just say no thanks, they're going to ask you again. Then sometime later, they're going to ask you again. Best way to handle that is the first time just say, I don't do that because I'm a child of God. And after a while, you won't be faced with that temptation because they're not going to be asking. I think that's a practice. I think it helps.
Very good. Thank you. You know, let me interject one other thing here before the next question. I'm not trying to take up all the time on it. But, you know, there's seldom ever that I preach a sermon or what there's somebody on this or what there's somebody in the audience that's been guilty of. I'm no more talking to you, you know, than when I preach on the alien sinner who's now not an alien sinner anymore, who's gotten forgiveness for it. There's a lady even in my home congregation now in Harrison that doesn't, it's offensive to her. She's scared. Her husband's sitting there, he's an ex-alcoholic. He's a man. And she's used to, she was offended before he came back to the church. She was attending a digressive church. She told me it offended her for any preacher to get up and preach on alcoholism because her husband was one. You know, we're not talking down people who receive forgiveness for them either any time we attack situations like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, concerning Paul's advice to Timothy, why for your stomach's sake. About a year ago, I had my wisdom teeth taken out. Jimmy Cutter can tell you that my best friend at that time was these little pills the doctor prescribed for me. Just because he prescribed them for pain, that didn't give Jimmy any right to take them, and didn't give me any right to take them after I got well, and didn't give us any right at all to sit down and have a party and take them. You know, it was for a medicinal reason. That doesn't allow the social aspect.
Well said. I had pleurisy the other year, too, and they gave me Percodan. Percodan's from opium. If you had never took cat stuff, you won't have no pain, I guarantee you. I only took about four of them, and I was scared to take any more because my chest was wanting some more, and I wasn't about to get some more.
Also, in relationship to another part of your talk, you gave reference to Leviticus 10, the priests. And how they were forbidden from drinking wine when they went to the tabernacle. I wonder if that is a really strong, valid argument. You know, the priests were also forbidden from touching a dead body except for a near kinsman. They were forbidden from marrying a widow except one who had been widowed by a priest. And, you know, various other things there. I just wonder, you know, making the best argument. You know, I think there's a good example lesson we can learn from that, whether that's an argument that Christians should not because the priests were forbidden to. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And I've never heard that expressed, quite frankly, and I'll give it some consideration. But my thoughts on that would be, just immediately, for whatever they're worth, you know, would be some of that was ceremonial, wasn't it, about touching, you know, a body there. That was ceremonial. And I don't understand that as something morally, you know, or spiritually
yeah.
here. This had to do with.
Well, look at it this way. What he said there in Leviticus 10, drink no wine or strong drink, nor thou or thy sons with thee when you go in the tabernacle of the congregation, lest you die.
And it shall be a statute forever throughout your generation, that you may put a difference between holy and unholy, between unclean and clean, and so on and so forth. And then in Leviticus 21, it talks about defiling themselves for the dead. And it says in verse 6, and they shall be holy unto their God, and not profane the name of the Lord, for the offerings of the Lord made by fire, and so on. The same reason is given. That it's because they're to be holy. That's why they weren't to drink wine. And then it says, you're not to make any baldness on your heads, the cutting or your cuttings in your flesh, shave off the corner of your beards, or as it says earlier, to make yourself unclean with the dead, except for a near kinsman, because you're to be holy. Seems the same reason it's used there. I'm just uneasy at using that as an absolute argument as to not to negate anything, the strength of what you're saying.
Okay. And did he say that that you can not put any difference between the holy and the unholy, while he did specify this holy back there and that they would be clean? I understand all that being ceremonial. So this year was it doesn't all hold up. I mean, understand that it wouldn't have to have every word generally be a parallel between it. I understand that. But I see the parallel to me. He's showing between that which is holy and that which is unholy, you know, clean and unclean. The profane, holy. I think we get around it now. What's written for our learning, those things, that's profane. The man that went in and drank it was profane. Now, did he say the man that touched that, was he profane? You know, touched, like I say, every word don't have to be. But nevertheless, I think we can read it more than that.
Thank you, though. I appreciate you talking.
Like Ronnie Wade one time, if you got a bunch of... Like Ronnie Wade said one time, and Mark Elliott come out and said he had him sweating after a debate. Ronnie in a debate says, got up with Jesse Jenkins, and he says, you know, says, he's talking about making everything comparing. And he says, you know, Brother Jenkins, I might say, you know, you got two ears and a donkey's got two ears, you know. And you got a nose and a donkey's got a nose. But he said, you know, I've never called you a donkey. Mark Elliott come out and said, boy, I just knew you was going to say he's a donkey. You know, because he had to. So he said he'd done everything. That's it. Bad.
Brendan? Jimmy, did you quote from some sources that said that wine has medicinal advantages for the stomach, because I'd always read that because of its alcoholic content that it irritates the stomach, and alcohol irritates the stomach lining.
Okay, that was certain wines, and I understand most of them was cooked down, some drugs and that would cook the alcohol out.
So you're talking about, then are you saying that in 1 Timothy it's non-intoxicating wine?
No, I think it would probably be some of the medicinal, maybe even have some of the drugs with it. I don't know. You know, it was medicinal purposes.
Because that's what I've always understood about Timothy, was that it was cooked down and therefore not intoxicating. Because if it was intoxicating, the alcoholic content would irritate the lining of the stomach.
I've read the medical arguments both ways, but then they said there's a lot of them that were. They used it off the... in the sense that even medicinally, it was some drugs with it that was, I understood, and I'll show you what I've got. So, well, it's really out of, I don't know if it's out of Bales. I got a footnote here.
Thank you.
Okay, Irvin Bach. I'm under the impression, and you can correct me if this is wrong, where here in Ephesians 5 and 18, and be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess, that the excess is a result of being drunk with wine. Because it comes from the same Greek word as the, or it's kin in a way, to this prodigal son, where it says that he went into a far country and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And so be not drunk with wine, because it brings on riotous living. Is that not what that passage did?
I believe so.
I happen to know a congregation very, very intimately, where that we know of at least 10 people, I mean 9 people, that were drunks at one time in their life, who were later strong leaders in the church. 5 of those people have admitted that they were desperate alcoholics at one time. Many of them are already dead. This is a problem that can be handled. And I would surprise and shock this audience if I called the names of some of the people that were absolutely imprisoned at one time in their life with alcoholism. And some of them are still living, but they whipped it. And there's some of them that we thought that are still living that's in the church now that we thought never would, but they have. And it can be overcome.
Amen. And I could name some, but also I could name you probably some of those can point where there was some damage, brain damage that was done by the drinking too for years. That I could tell you some problems and flashbacks. It's not much different from the marijuana and the drugs too. Some flashbacks from it.
Before we take the next question, can I just interject, Jimmy, that it's been my experience in dealing with the problem of social drinking among people that I've known. I don't think I've ever had to convince anybody who had been a problem drinker that they ought not to drink. It is almost always someone who's been raised in the church and who has absolutely no idea what it involves.
And it's like Wayne McKenna said the other year when he preached on a certain garment and modesty. I've never been asked, is it all right to drink? I've never been asked that question. Is it all right to drink alcoholic beverages? I've had them come and justify try to with some of these verses. By the way, now that clock has been unplugged back there.
Yeah, but mine's still running. Alan Bonifay and Connie Briggs, and then we'll cut it off.
Jimmy, on this deal in 1 Timothy 5, I appreciate what Johnny said a while ago, showing that whatever that wine was, it was medicinal. It's for use there rather than for drinking. But in relation to what Raymond said, from the Greek word there, oinos, I mean, we may make some arguments about whether, you know, someone may say, well, I think that's fermented there. Someone say, well, I don't think it is, but you can't tell from the words.
Oh,
yes. You'd be hard-pressed to prove that that word means fermented in 1 Timothy 5. You couldn't prove that. You might think it is, but...
That's right. Well, even giving it that, it's medicinal.
Yeah. But if you... You know, no one can use 1 Timothy 5 to justify social drinking. They can't even prove that it's fermented.
First of all, he didn't recommend it for himself, either. Man, the doctor's own self got a fool for a doctor and a patient.
I read out of the New King James, and in Matthew, the 27th chapter, verse 48, it says that a person there took a reed with some wine on it, is what mine says. The regular King James says vinegar, and I'm not sure if the parallel passage tells us that Jesus ever took any, but I was wondering if this could be the medicinal type wine that, like Raymond was talking about.
Well, yeah, it was to kill pain. They gave it to it. But it's that's one way too that we prove that he used grape juice in the Lord's Supper, the fruit of the vine, because he said he wouldn't drink no more with it until he drank it with them in the Father's kingdom. And the one says he partook of it there. So I say that was permanent. It's even the one that he gave there for medicinal. One thing, let me say before I close, it's all my fault. Anytime we are responsible for the impression we leave with people. And the other day on Providence, I certainly left some wrong impressions. I was trying to get a lick in on materialism, but I left it. I certainly pray for daily food, which I acquire with material goods. And I can't ever recall that I believe in the providence of God. And I don't recall ever beginning a journey without ever asking God's providential care. Before I began this journey, I asked him, and he's surely been with me and had been with y'all millions and millions of miles. But I left the wrong impression the other day, and I apologize and ask forgiveness for that.